All right, here we go. You sound good. It's a good radio voice. Yeah, that's nice. We're doing a little vocal warm-up before the segment. We're great. The Troy Foundry Theater has commissioned Diecast of Philadelphia for the co-creation of a new site-specific immersive performance piece. You put all those words together, and I know it means something, and we'll talk about exactly what that is in just a moment. It's unfolding the underground subculture of alcohol and speakeasies in Troy, New York during Prohibition. The company will take residency at Colorworks in Troy for the development and performance of the new work, The Prohibition Project. In a country divided, there is a battle being waged over who gets to be called an American. Workers are striking, immigrants are coming, and the Democratic Party has too many candidates for the upcoming convention. Pause. Yes, it is the end of the roaring 1920s, and everyone knows the world is about to change, but whose change will win out? We are joined this morning by Troy Foundry Theater Executive Director David Gerard. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Producing Executive Director Emily Curo. Good morning, Emily.
Hey, Joe.
So good to see you. And co-director of Diecast Theater in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, director and co-creator of the Prohibition Project, Brenna Geffers, is here, and company member of Diecast and cast member of the Prohibition Project, Ross Beschler, is here. Good morning, all. How
Hello.
Are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Doing well.
It is great to have you all here. So, David, let us begin with you as to why you wanted to do this particular thing in Troy.
Well, this actually came out of a dream that Emily had. We were having drinks after a show one night. Brenna had come up to direct La Ronde for us, and we were having drinks on my back porch, and Emily told us about having a dream being a torch song singer.
All right, pause. Emily, tell me about your dream.
Oh my goodness. So this dream, there's not much to it. I found myself in a dark alleyway wearing a red dress and, as David says, singing torch songs. And I immediately texted Brenna. And I said, I had this dream. And she said, that's it. And that's kind of how it started.
Okay, so am I missing something? What is the link between that and Prohibition?
Well, once Emily told me the dream, I imagined her in sort of old-fashioned club, and I poked around on the internet for a hot second, and I saw that Troy was a pretty key place in terms of both politically and in terms of prohibition in the 1920s. So I was like, we should make a piece about that.
Yeah. Okay, so it's as simple as that.
Yeah,
it really is.
Now, do you mind, how much do you mind your dreams for material?
That's a great really question. I know as an actor, I know that I have the kind of dreams during a production week that start to inform a little bit of my work. As a creator,
positively,
yeah, yeah, absolutely positively. I'm not talking about the actor's nightmare. That's a whole different
thing.
But I think I mine a little bit as an actor. As a creator, sure. I think even subconsciously we take things that we're sort of like when we're restful, we take some of what we're thinking subconsciously and work it into our work. At least I believe that anyway.
So now back to you, before we go any further. Then you take the idea, you have all the players, and then you think we can do what with this?
We can create a piece of art, of theatrical art, with it. I nerded out on this project. I'm more or less the dramaturg. I did a lot of research for Brenna. Brenna did a significant amount of research, and I kind of fell down a lot of rabbit holes. During this process, I found out that my great-grandfather was arrested as a bootlegger, and I had.
And you could have never been prouder.
I called my dad. We were so excited. My dad was like, yes! it was really interesting. There was a lot of different rabbit holes. I think even the politics of the time. I mean, we knew there were some parallels to what's going on in the country now.
Yeah.
I didn't realize quite how many parallels there are. And when you look at the Troy Times, because that's been a really big research angle that I've taken, is looking at that newspaper that doesn't exist anymore, but reported a lot. And it was hard to miss a lot of these parallels, and hard to miss the fact that Prohibition and the idea of Prohibition and the issues that it brought up showed up on the front page nearly every day. There was always a story having to do with something having to do with Prohibition, and even and particularly the national politics of it. You were either a wet or you were dry. And clearly the noble experiment by the time we get to 1930 is not working.
Right. Well, that's the thing, is we do know through history that, yeah, this experiment didn't go well.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's really interesting to think about it in terms of a very expensive, very flashy, very anti-immigration publicity stunt that took on a national scale. And it feels very recognizable to me right now.
Yeah. So I have a lot of questions, and so just raise your hand if you're the person who should answer them.
We're good at that.
Excellent. So the idea of going to Collar Works, how did that come about?
I can speak to that.
Okay.
So
Emily, I've called on Emily Carroll.
Yes,
go
that
ahead.
Is me. Our buildings and our space definitely is a huge part of how we create, and it drives our story. So Collar Works Gallery, we found out, actually, the building on at 621 River Street used to be the home of, tell me the name again.
It's Van Zandt Jacobs and Company.
Okay.
And they were a paper collar and shirt factory.
Yes.
So that idea.
Troy being the collar city, of course.
Yes. So that idea really kind of helped Brenna in terms of setting our piece. So the residency with Collar Works, we're working with Elizabeth Dubin over there. She's amazing. They are an art installation. They deal mostly in large art installations. So that's that partnership has been really important because our show, the set, the scenery looks like large art installations. It's
yeah.
great.
Yes. Really defined. Even this story, if we had a couple different locations in mind, if it were in a hotel, it would have maybe taken place in a hotel. If it were in the vault of a bank, it would have taken place in the vault of a bank. In this case, we were on the bottom floor of a collar factory, and that allowed Brenna to be able to sort of ground the piece in that locale, as well as many other locales.
So talk about that, Brenna, as to what you're able to do with the space that you have now.
Well, one thing that became important in the piece once we were in the Collar Works Gallery, which used to be a shirt factory, a collar factory, is that the idea of the union and worker and economic situations and clashes of the time rose to the surface as being an important theme in a way that might not have been if we were, say, in a hotel space. So there are characters who are sprung from that location in the Collar Works. Now, the fact that it's sort of a bit of a gallery-type space as well allowed us to treat the space a little bit more magically than if we were in, again, say, a hotel. So while we are in the a shirt factory for much of the piece, there are little pockets of other realities throughout the space in a way that when you wander a gallery, you see different exhibitions and pieces of art. This piece has the same kind of feel to that.
I promise, Ross, we'll let you speak on this program. I mean, just one more question for Brenna. Talk a little bit about Diecast, how this company came about.
Diecast came about very recently. I was between conversations between a designer named Tom Weaver and I in Philadelphia. We had been working together a lot as freelancers and decided that we really wanted to explore this idea of immersive site-specific theater, where the space itself became a collaborator and influencer in the text rather than just being a container for the text. So we make the stories based upon the spaces that we're in, rather than finding a space that feels right. Then inside of Diecast, we have a collective of actors who know how to do this work, and we're kind of constantly exploring and experimenting with how we make it. And so that's how that came.
So, Ross, what do you need to know to do this type of work?
That's a really good question. I need to know how to listen very deeply to a group of people. I find a lot of this work is, you know, it's funny, I'm sort of stuck on this thing that we started with of dreams and thinking about how much, you know, like the dream space is also the art space, and I feel like the art we make is very much like in that space. And so to be able to let your boundaries get soft so that with a group of people you're both able to create a giant story together and then have your own character within that and manipulate space and time together through breath, through sound, through use of space, through eye contact, through dialogue, through traditional scene work requires a lot of 360 degree listening and like kinesthetic feeling skills.
Yeah, so true.
I need to be able to really absorb, sit with, and be with a group of people in a very deep way.
Okay. I have a lot of follow-up questions to what you just said because, as you may know, that was very heavy.
Yeah.
So, number one, Do you need to do that? Do you have to come to a point where that is, where you do it almost unconsciously, where it is buried in the subconscious, or do you have to be conscious of it as you do it?
I think both. It becomes a part of my instrument, me, yes. And also I need to warm that up a little bit.
And then how does the I assume, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but the end goal would be to have the audience do what you're to mirror you in that way of following you around in that environment.
Yeah, actually.
And feeling those feelings. So how do you do that? Because you have to worry about you, and then do you let them worry about themselves, or is that...
Well, that's an interesting thing. There's a little bit of both. There is a little bit of both taking care of the audience and asking them to step into... Yep. And I never quite thought about it that way, that I'm mirroring what I want them to do. And I'm also sort of like poking, provoking, and challenging them at the same time to be present or to be... Actually, like one of the interesting things about an immersive piece is you'll find yourself in a space with a person talking to you in an imaginary reality that you are, as an audience member, in but not in. And that's a very challenging space sometimes.
And you have spent more time in it than they have. Yes. You have created it in many ways. So you want to bring them in so that they understand. And you're basically bringing them up to your to where you are. Fairly quickly.
Yeah. Inviting them inside. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that ever a challenge in the writing? Of bringing that together?
Oh, I guess I never thought of it as a challenge. It's more like a puzzle.
Yeah.
And so in terms of trying to figure out how long an audience member can hang out in one particular location before they want to wander away, trying to guess that ahead of time, trying to figure out which scenes are pleasurable to experience.
Well, where are they going
to
go? Where do they wander? Do they wander?
Yeah. The audience is on their feet.
Oh, okay.
And
all right.
They
I'm sorry. I missed that part of
oh,
it.
No,
oh,
no.
Okay.
So the action happens in a 360-degree environment. The
right.
action is happening
okay.
simultaneously.
Got that.
So the audience chooses what piece they want to look at.
I see.
In what order they want to look at it.
And, okay.
And so certain pieces overlap in a way. And so... There's a fun in terms of figuring out which pieces are, how to overlap the pieces in a way that you can experience both at the same time.
So is that bringing up a competition in some ways of like fighting for an audience?
Oh.
I don't think we've ever thought of it that
way. Yeah, no, I definitely don't think of it that way.
It's more like...
Sharing them.
Yeah. And working together to... create that collaborative experience.
Yeah, there's a lot of math involved. Too. It really is. I mean,
okay. So how does the math involve?
Well, I mean, I'm going to use the word that Brenna uses because I think it's sort of apt. Is that basically Brenna is developing a pretty large algorithm.
Okay.
To decide how one part of a piece, perhaps an internal cue, is cueing another piece across the room, because these are mostly, let's say, scenes happening simultaneously. In some respects, but they're not the same length. Some are shorter, some are longer. So you have pieces ending at different moments, and that ending of one moment may be cueing another moment across the room, and that really is designed. There is no happenstance. I mean, there's happenstance certainly in a rehearsal process that you'd make discoveries as you're going along, but at some point that we do ground that, right? We do there is a
right.
plan so that you're basically presenting the same thing each night. It might have a different sort of emotionality with respect to the actor or the audience involved.
But at the end of the day, at 15 minutes and 36 seconds, David's character has to come into a room.
Right.
As an example.
Yeah.
Okay. So, how do I ask this? Because, I mean, anybody going to anything is going to have a different experience. But what I mean is, so if someone comes in and they wander from one thing to another, then their experience is going to just be inherently different than somebody
Absolutely.
Else's experience.
Because
they're going to
totally.
Hear different words, see different things, right? Okay.
Yeah, and that's kind of the hope. That's the point.
Yeah, that's the point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah.
And then how do you end it? Like how does it draw to a natural conclusion?
In a way that like any type of musical composition comes to the end. So sort of the themes repeat, overlap, change, mm-hmm. adapt, find the way that the themes sync up, have a rhythmic climax, and finish it.
Yeah. Nice.
I go pay the meter and go home. Yeah. You're all done. Uh-huh. Well, it's the Troy Foundry Theater presenting the Prohibition Project. It is running March 7th through the 17th. To find out more, you can go to TroyFoundryTheater.com. TroyFoundryTheater.com. This sounds really, really cool. Congratulations
thank
to
you.
All of you.
Thanks,
and
Joe.
Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank
it's
you,
always
Joe.
A pleasure to have you here. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.